This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, okay, hold on, I got a new favorite food.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie Mayo.
Yeah, it's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it at the grocery store.
And this mayo is different.
Mm-hmm. Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything. Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Radically Well podcast. I am so excited for our guest today. Mayim Bialik is an actor, neuroscientist, and mental health advocate. She's best known for her roles on The Big Bang Theory and Blossom. She brings science and storytelling to spark honest conversations about the human experience. Her podcast is called Mayim Bialik's Breakdown, where she has conversations about mental health. I'm so excited to have her on the show today. I hope you enjoy. You really have one of the best podcasts.
That's really nice.
No, it's true. You really
do. Thank you. We have a very good time. And it's changed a lot, you know, over the years that we've been doing it.
Yeah.
Which has been really interesting to see.
Okay, well, tell me, like, the beginning, like, what was your vision when you first started the podcast?
Yeah, so the podcast has, like, a very, very mental health related beginning, and that's fitting because it's about mental health. And, you know, I'm trained as a neuroscientist, I'm trained as, like, a science communicator, so I was really interested in being able to, you know, kind of continue the public platform that I had, but with some of my science knowledge. And this was right around the time that the COVID pandemic began. And at that point, everything was shutting down. And my partner and I were like, this could be a podcast. And I said to him, I've literally never listened to a podcast. He's like, I promise, it's like a thing. This was years ago. Almost 5 years ago. He's like, it's a thing. We could just talk. And I'm like, I don't even understand how that would. Like, I knew talk show, right? I was like, I could pitch a talk show to Warner Brothers at the time. I had a Warner Brothers deal. And I'm like, I could pick a talk show where I talk about sciencey things. And he was like, no, it's a podcast. And so the reason that it sort of evolved into this during COVID was COVID freaked my brain out. And I had all this, you know, what we know as anticipatory anxiety, right? I was having nightmares. I couldn't sleep. And like, you know, my eating got all weird. And my partner, Jonathan, and I realized, like, if we're feeling this way and we have resources, we have therapists, right? We have access to medication if we need. What about all the people in the world who are experiencing this and may not even have a vocabulary for what's going on? And I would talk to people who were like, gosh, since COVID, I just can't sleep. I can't figure it out. And I was like, it's called anxious. Like, it's a thing that many of us know a lot about. So that literally was the start of the podcast, was to democratize mental health, to be able to explain these are the things going on in your body that might meet this criteria. Not so much so that we could tell people to get on medication, because that may not be the answer for everybody, but to be able to have some empowerment to say, you don't just have to go to a doctor and be given whatever pill they tell you. There are breathing techniques, there's meditation, there's yoga, there's all these things that many people have deemed fringe out there. But yeah. Guess what? They're actually tools that for thousands of years people have used. Yeah. And that's sort of how our podcast then kept evolving. As more and more people were interested in the out there, we've continued to say, well, what's the science behind it? You know, what's the science behind all of these practices, meditation, all these things? So that's kind of where we've evolved. And we talk to a lot of people having experiences outside of what the scientific community has typically been able to entertain. But more and more scientists cannot deny what people are experiencing, what they're reporting. And there is a scientific framework for understanding all of this, much of it based in mysticism that didn't have the science thousands of years ago because it didn't need to, because they knew.
Part of what I find so fascinating is how it is framed in this more science, you know, from the perspective of science, right? And I'm curious, for you and your training, and like, you're a PhD, you're a doctor, mm-hmm. you know, like, how does that inform how you have these conversations with people that, let's say,
there's not as much scientific data.
So it's interesting because, you know, once you have a PhD, they can't take it away from you, which is great. But also, you know, I acknowledge that I'm not like a practicing neuroscientist. You know, I'm not working in a lab. I'm not like keeping track of scientific journals and research. Like, that's not the arena that I revolve in. But what I have is a brain that is trained in understanding and asking specific kinds of questions, and also being a scientist actually means being open to whatever's going on without kind of, you know, dismissing it just because it doesn't fit your worldview. We've talked to Jeffrey Kripal a few times, and he's a really, really interesting professor of religion, actually, who gets into sort of the framework we have for this. And the way he describes it is, if you take everything off the table that you're not comfortable with and that you can't explain, and then you say, well, here are the things that I can explain, that's actually not an accurate representation of what's going on in the world, as opposed to everything's on the table. Yeah. How do we understand it? And for the things that we can't understand, what is the science? So that's sort of where I get to come in. And my partner, Jonathan, is much more like, I just feel it. I have intuition. Yeah. And I can feel it. And it's true. And it's great that there's people like that. And I'm sort of in this in between. Like, I'm a person of faith. I'm a person who believes in many things I can't explain, but I'm also not willing to make sweeping statements about them until I can understand a little bit more of the scientific structure. But it is a big responsibility to sort of come at it as a scientist, because, you know, people like Huberman and people like Peter Attia and people like, you know, Sam Harris, they're not going to entertain this that way. There's some people who do, but it's hard. And I get it. I get it.
What I love the most about your approach and that perspective is that I also, look, I love mysticism. Like, it's fun. I love a good psychic reading on occasion, you know, but I also grew up around, you know, deep, largely Catholic household. At the same time, my grandmother, like, very into indigenous practices, like, she, you know, did tinctures and it was herbal remedies and it was, mm-hmm. and it was like, okay, pray about it. I'm like, yep. I have a headache. It's like, pray. And I'm like, can I just get a little, like, some Advil or something, you know? And, but to me, I feel really lucky having had that upbringing, because it could have gone both ways. I could have gone really super intuitive into that realm. But what happened for me, especially during my teenage years, when I was experiencing panic attacks and anxiety, and I was like, I need to know what's happening. Like, I want to know what the function of my brain is. And I need to understand this from a science perspective, because God's not making this go away.
Well, and so, you know, with due respect to your abuela, like, the fact is, the notion of praying about it, right, which is something that many of our grandmothers and ancestors have said, you know, if you take that from a Joe Dispenza perspective, right, yeah. What does it mean to put yourself in a mindset where you are open and available to other modalities of healing that might literally come from inside of you? Mm. And, you know, my kids, I'm the hippie side of things, but it's kind of the same. They're like, I don't want to take deep breaths and lay down. I want you to give me the Advil. Right? Like, but the Western perspective is, we're going to treat that symptom. You've got a symptom, we're going to treat it. And the Eastern perspective, the indigenous perspective, like the mystical and sort of like that woo-woo side, science is now realizing there is actual reasons that we are harnessing other capabilities for healing. And if you look at our culture, which you and I have talked about, we're not being set up for success here. Yeah. Emotionally and mentally. I can't tell you the number of friends I have who are depressed, anxious, can't sleep. And when you look at an assessment of what their life is like, it's madness. We're sitting in the car for exorbitant amounts of time. We're competing against a beauty model of perfection, especially in cities like Los Angeles, that, like, can take up all of your time. We've been trained to be addicted to something by companies that knew they were getting us addicted to them. So our time and attention are totally fragmented. Of course, we don't know, like, up from down. We're not being set up for success here. And I don't mean to say, like, we need to go back to hunter-gatherer times, because that had its own challenges and we've evolved to a different place. However, connection with other people, In particular, women being supported by other women, especially when it comes to raising children, educating the next generation, that was the work of groups of very well-connected women. And men were not expected to be in your face all the time asking you to make them three meals a day. It's a very different thing. And I'm not saying that all men are doing that, but we have these beautiful relationships that we can have, you know, especially in serial monogamy, not just in male-female relationships, but we're not really designed to have two people in one house by themselves. Yeah. We're designed to be in a community, and it's no wonder. We're feeling stressed, we're feeling anxious, we're feeling depressed, we're feeling like my partner's not meeting my needs. Maybe I need to open up the relationship, right? Like, maybe I just need to not be with this human all the time and hang out with some friends. He needs some friends or she needs some friends. We're not set up for success here. So, like, it's no wonder.
And we're also so overwhelmed by the thought of gathering with people because we're so, right? Like, to me, this is my favorite experience. When I was teaching yoga, I taught yoga for 20 years, you know, and it was always so fascinating to me how I really wanted to go practice in a studio with people, but I was terrified of somebody talking to me or addressing, you know, like to go and have that space of community, but I don't want to engage with people.
Well, and also I think COVID kind of like double clicked on that for all of us, because for those of us who tend to be socially anxious for a variety of reasons, we got to isolate. And we see what's happened to this generation of kids that were kind of in these situations. It happened to adults too. It really did. Like, I really got used to not having to interact with humans at the supermarket, right? Think of how many times we didn't have to get gas, right?
Did you like that or no? Like, tell me the truth.
I kind of liked, I mean, here's the thing. I have a very specific way I go to the supermarket because the way my brain is organized, it has to be every aisle. I can't skip an aisle. I cannot. So like, I've got like a thing and it's a thing. My kids are like, why is this our life? So I always liked going to the market when it was quiet because then I wasn't dealing with like screaming children and like too many people with their carts, you know? So I definitely have like supermarket issues, but I think a lot of us, you know, especially people who could afford to, became used to not interacting. And I think it's sort of, you know, for many of us kind of exacerbated that already, like, how do I interact with people? And I think with young people and even with adults, it also made us forget a lot of the sort of niceties of interacting and having to learn those kinds of skills. And I think that's been kind of, you know, for many of us, a net negative, you know, like it has.
Yeah. And I think it definitely speaks to our, the increase of anxiety and depression and, you know, all these rates of, you know, struggle that we're encountering not only as adults, but young adults too. And you're a parent of two boys, right? And so, I mean, I don't want to, like, we can go down the rabbit hole of that, but I think it's all really important, mental health specifically. And it kind of brings me back to why I wanted to have you on the show, you know, because a lot of our conversations been around women, and we talked about menopause, we talked about aging. Like, I think for, you know, in where we are now in our society, the conversation of women and aging, I feel like it's become really in vogue, which is great. I'm here for it, yeah. You know, but I still feel like we're not really talking about the important topics. It's really like, here, something's wrong with you. Try this product. Like, right. Here, do this. And now do this. Oh, right. This is, you're having vaginal dryness. Like, here, fix it. You know, it's like, can we just talk about like what we're going through? Because so many women that I've talked to since kind of shifting my whole platform, I talk to women all day long, you know, and they're asking things like, what do I do when I'm at work and I'm having a hot flash and I'm not close with my coworkers and I don't want to tell them that I'm in menopause because, number one, I'm at that age and there's some shame around it. And two, like, why do I have to be the one to say anything to them? You know, it's like she's having all of these feelings and doesn't feel like it's, I don't want to say a safe space, but that's essentially the sentiment, to talk about it, right?
Well, and I think also, as with a lot of women's issues, so much of the focus becomes about the external experience.
Yes.
And how we look. I mean, I even think about, I mean, I think we're ish, I think I'm older than you, but we're ish the same age. Remember when there were like ads for tampons, yes. You know, and the entire emphasis was around like, no one needs to know. We don't want them to know. Like,
yeah,
you could
hide it.
Yeah. Like, do you want to wear the tightest pants possible throughout the month? Here's the product for you. Yeah. Right. And so when we think about like just how we sort of frame it, I think so much of the conversation, even around feminism, became around, I want to be naked. That's feminism, which like totally fine. Good. But there are so many other issues like the right to control what happens to our body and not have the government tell us, right? So I feel like the same thing's kind of happening with so many aspects of menopause, because it's so much easier to talk about like, your skin's gonna be so plump, like if you use this cream,
or like, it's like you're reversing
your vagina, right? Yeah. Like your vagina dryness, yes. Right? Or like vaginal rejuvenation surgery, like super important. Many people can benefit from these things, but and what you know how to talk about and what I think we're afraid to talk about is these harder things.
Yeah.
It's the what does it feel like when I don't know what my worth is in this society anymore? You know, what does it feel like when if I think like to, I don't know, 10, 100,000 years ago, like I would have been dead because like once you're past a certain fertility window, we're just like, we'd be that lady in the village, like, let me remind you, like, you know, it's like, what are those things? Those are harder to talk about and they don't sell as much product. And that's also the thing. It's like, I remember when, you know, every phase of like, what can we sell to women has shifted. And, you know, even in our lifetime, we've seen it. They're always trying to sell us something.
Yeah.
They're always trying to sell something. And it is the way the market works, because emotional cohesiveness does not pay the bills for advertising companies. It just doesn't. But you know what does? Vaginal rejuvenation.
Yeah, yeah, they are feeding on your pain points, yeah. And that's how they're...
Your belly fat. That's all I hear, yes. About menopause. I'm like, oh, do you want it? Like, oh, I'll never have a waist again. No, take this pill, do this thing. And it's like, yes, it would be nice to have a waist again. I totally get it. But also there's so many other aspects that like women need support in.
Yeah.
You like, know, totally.
Yeah, and part of this process too, in my discovery and research going through, just if you're just tuning in and you don't know my background, I went into early menopause. I started perimenopause at 35. I'm 42, so I'm postmenopausal. For many years, I struggled. Nobody knew what was going on. And I had all the symptoms, the brain fog, the depression, the vaginal dryness, the mood swings, the hot flat, just everything. And weight gain, like I gained like 32 pounds, like it kind of happened overnight and we couldn't really figure out. I was in the process of a fertility journey. I was miscarrying and we're trying to figure out what was happening and the doctors couldn't tell me. And so I ended up going on a deep dive at the beginning of 2024, and I was able to find doctors that were able to help me and suggest I get on HRT, which to me has been a huge benefit. And I know that some people are still really sort of on the fence about it, and we can talk about the stigma of that too. But for me, it's not the only way, I know, but for me it was absolutely helpful because I was really struggling mostly with my mental health, and which was so not, and I hate to use the air quotes, like me, but for me to have all these tools and mindfulness, like I felt like growing up in East LA during like one of the most violent times in history was like the hard part of my life. I'm like, I'm supposed to, you know, be like doing good in the world, you know, like I volunteer and I'm in this world. I want to help people. And now it's like, I'm struggling and I'm like, I have I don't have the wherewithal to be able to feel better. And so saying all that to say that for me, this process of having those difficult conversations, I find to be the most helpful, because not everybody has the access. Not everybody has the privilege that I had to be able to go to different doctors and have the money to pay out of pocket. Because still insurance won't cover my hormones because they still don't think it's necessary. So I'm still having to pay out of pocket and I could afford to do it. But what about the women that can't?
I mean, I think we know exactly what happens, you know, and this is something we talk about a lot, especially when we've spoken to, you know, menopause experts on our podcast. And, you know, it's funny because I'm always like the voice of this aspect of the conversation, because I think it's important. And I think there's a responsibility for me, that I feel, having a platform to not be like, if you just go on hormones, your life's going to be amazing. And here's a guest to tell you all about it. You know, when the fact is, like, even getting your doctor to listen to you for most women is an enormous hurdle. And it's the underserved populations. It's statistically speaking, it's women of color. It's, you know, even the trans population, right? It's so many populations that are ignored and pushed aside in so many other ways. And this is sort of where we see it really breaking down at this time in life. You know, I grew up, my dad was a public school teacher. I grew up in LA and I grew up at Kaiser Sunset, and I love Kaiser Sunset. Like, that's where I spent, you know, my whole like medical youth. But the system of healthcare that is established by organizations that really can't support the needs of a population means you get a 10-minute appointment these days. You know, you don't get any continuity with your doctor, and they are looking for the solution that keeps you from coming back. Meaning, what can I do to make the problem go away, when it's usually just treating a symptom and not actually figuring out what's going on? And this is not to denigrate Kaiser at all. My mother still goes to Kaiser. We're still a Kaiser family. Yeah. But the notion that the system is not made to kind of help these kind of things. And we have an enormous percentage of the population in need right now. And so many women still don't even know. You know, I mean, the percentage of women who can even have access to hormone replacement therapy, who qualify and need it, it's ridiculous. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that I feel like we should be, you know, outraged about, which I know many of us are on a smaller scale, but this is not how you treat half the population.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, going back to what the topic of, I mean, this is one big conversation, right? But there's also the correlating components of the experience as a woman, right? The shame, we were talking about the face creams or the collagen or this or that. It's like, just in society, our value and our worth, and how you're dealing with so much. And I'm like, fuck, it's hard being a woman, you know, like it is, yeah. It really is. And I really think that it's important for me to be able to have these conversations, to continue to shed light on this topic, and for more women to feel like it is okay to talk about it, and it is okay for you to feel how you feel and
to take up space. And
yes.
I think that's the thing, is like, we have all the like complicated aspects of being female always. And then when you get to this stage of life, for many of us, it's still hard to say, I'm not getting the care that I need. I don't feel like you're hearing me. I need another doctor. And so many, you can't come back another day. You know, that's the thing too. We have a system that's not really setting us up for that kind of success, right? I mean, even, you know, I remember like parents missing work so that they can take you to the doctor. It's financially complicated. It compromises a lot of people's lives. So of course we're going to try and treat symptoms. I get it, right? But I think for women in particular, it's like putting you up against your hardest thing, because it's advocating to take up space. It's saying my needs are not being met and I don't know how to meet them myself, which usually we're like, I got it. I'll handle it. I'll figure it out, right? Yeah. And for many of us, it's hard to rely on an establishment, a corporation, a patriarchal structure that's been set up that doesn't really feel like it has my best interests necessarily first and foremost. And I think it's also amazing that we're seeing, and you know, we've seen in the last 10 years, the growth of women-centered, you know, conversations around this, whether it's, you know, access to healthcare, books, website, you know, there's so many resources now. But my heart really breaks for the women, again, who don't have those resources, who can't pay out of pocket, who don't have the ability to kind of, you know, have concierge medicine, which is what a lot of people are turning to. And I understand it, but it doesn't really help most of the women, is my feeling.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I feel like if conversations like this can be of any service, it's showing and telling women that they're not alone, that they're, you know, we are going through this together. Like the statistic is 100% over.
That's right.
We'll go through it.
And you're not crazy.
Right.
Which, you know, there's different names for that historically, right? You're not crazy. You're not hysterical. But any woman who's, you know, had a hot flash or soaked through the sheets of her bed or, you know, fill in any of the things that happen, you feel crazy. You do. You feel like I must be going crazy. I must be in a hysterical state because I don't understand how to manage this. And in many cases, a lot of things don't help and you have to try. And it's like, I think about when our moms went through this, they either suffered in silence or they suffered in loudness. And we were just like, mom hates her life.
Right.
Mom hates dad.
Or me.
Right.
Yeah.
Mom hates everything.
Yeah.
But I also think like that dismissal doesn't need to be our reality. You know, you're not crazy. And yeah, there's many, many options. And it's also, it's a process. And if we're thinking in kind of like Western medicine thinking, this is the hardest part of life.
Yes.
Because there's not one pill. There's not one answer. There's not like one, you know, clinical trial study that's like, oh, we figured it out. It's going to be so variable. And if you have any history of trauma with a capital T or a lowercase t, your experience through menopause is going to have a very different trajectory. And it may not look like those pretty ladies on TV.
Yeah, like all the celebs out there selling you.
Correct. They've also probably done ayahuasca journeys for their trauma. So maybe
God. Okay, let's, I'm trying to stay on track, right? Because I'm like, oh, we can go into that whole thing. It's really fascinating to me just the different, if we're going back to the topic of mental health, there's something that I saw recently that was sort of promoting this journey for women going through menopause. She's already laughing.
Let's go. Let's
literally.
Do it. You and me.
So what, how do you feel about this? Tell me your feelings.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to necessarily specifics because I don't know them, but what I will say, both as someone who studied the brain and nervous system, studied trauma, and, you know, has a podcast where we talk about that a lot. You know, this is the case of, you know, if you're a woman whose period was never regular, who kind of like could never figure out why all the girls seemed fine on their cycles and you weren't, if you've got any of those things going on, you know, if your ACE score for, you know, adverse childhood experiences, if you've ever taken that quiz and you've got points on that one, all of those things live in your body. They live in your system. And many of them lie dormant because we are strong and we are resilient. And especially as women, we compartmentalize that shit so that we can get the job done, whatever the job is, because that's what we do.
Yeah.
However, when you enter perimenopause, for those of us with complicated histories, a lot of old demons will surface. And they will insert themselves into your journey in ways that don't even feel concrete. Meaning, if when we enter perimenopause, if it was like, okay, the doctor would say to you, any negative thing that you ever witnessed, experienced, or felt, any abuse you witnessed, any trauma, any cultural trauma, intergenerational trauma, anything you saw, let's lay it on the table, and that's going to be processed as part of your perimenopause journey. That's kind of what it's like. And some people will have an easier time, and some people will have a harder time. But what we know physiologically is that if you are in a state where your body's been holding anything, and I can explain scientifically what that means if people are like, that's not a real thing. It's a real thing. What happens when all these hormones start shifting and when all the emotions that come up when hormones start shifting come up is any unmetabolized trauma, will insert itself into this process. So what that looks like is, you know, if you've ever had a friend who, like, when they stub their toe, you think maybe we're going to the ER by the sound of their scream. There are people who experience things more intensely. And I'm not talking about people who are dramatic, because sometimes people are like, you know, having kind of hyperbolic reactions. There are people who feel things more deeply. They feel things more. It hurts more. And that's true of the emotional experience as well. It hurts more. Those are the people who tend to get also diagnosed with autoimmune conditions, or the doctor starts looking at their thyroid and like, oh, look at that. And, you know, like thyroid hormones, all these things, like this is the connection system. For me, this is the hardest challenge and the one that's the hardest to do a podcast episode about for our podcast, where it's neatly tied up. Because every time we have someone on, you know, I'm like angrily typing to Jonathan, you know, during the podcast, like, that wasn't Mike. It didn't help. Like, progesterone didn't, you know. So, and there's more to it. And so for some of us, perimenopause, menopause is the time then that we get to sort of tackle these larger things. That's where there's an opportunity for people to make money off of saying to women, we're going to help you metabolize, which there are many legitimate ways to do that. And also, as we talked about with every aspect of the female experience, if there's a way to monetize it, capitalize it, you know, and manufacture an advertising marketing campaign about it that makes you feel like there is a perfection that we will help you reach, that's going to get picked up on, you know? And I mean, I can barely be alone with myself. I don't think I want to be in a room with other women journeying.
Right? Oh boy.
As they process their trauma.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are doing a lot of these things. And look, there's also yoga retreats and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm supportive of that, but I'm also very skeptical, you know, of the high price tags that come with these things, the promises, you know, that are made, and yeah, sort of what the intention is going in and the integration. And that's a big thing that you'll hear, you know, those of us who are in kind of the sciencey side of these conversations. Super great if people want to do journeys. Everybody's microdosing, I understand. Like, you can't swing a dead cat in Los Angeles without finding a woman who's microdosing. But, you know, what therapeutic approaches to these medications, and they are, they're in many cases indigenous medications that come with an entire cultural construct that we do not have if we were not raised in that community. Yeah. So what is the integration like? What is the processing after like? And, you know, I don't like to throw around cultural appropriation, but I think there's also a lot of cultural appropriation going on of saying we're going to insert all these people into, again, an experience, especially with things like ayahuasca, that has an entire cultural, religious, mystical, ancestral heritage to it. So I'm not knocking it. Like, if people want to do it, that's great. But I do think that there's something to the way that things like ayahuasca were incorporated, even things like peyote, you know, the way those things were incorporated was in a cultural construct that's very, very different than ours.
I mean, it's so fascinating to me, having been raised again by an abuelita who was deeply indigenous, and that was sort of part of our belief system, upbringing, to understand and have a reverence and respect for things that you only do when you're sick, right?
Interesting.
Not like a weekend in somebody's Hollywood apartment while you're drinking ayahuasca with your buddies every other weekend. Anyway,
But that's interesting, because, you know, the notion of the sacredness of medicine, whatever that medicine is, it's true. There's, you know, like, I was raised, you know, going to synagogue, and we had clothes that we were only allowed to wear to synagogue. Those were your synagogue clothes. If you went to like a super fancy party, like a wedding, maybe you could wear your synagogue clothes there, right? There were distinctions, right, about what we do and what's sacred and what's holy, right? And I appreciate all the progress of our amazing culture, and like all that stuff's falling away, and like men in t-shirts are like running corporations. It's fantastic. But when we talk about things like sacred medicine, yeah, there's an environment around it that doesn't exist just so that people like me can be like, that's cultural appropriation. Yeah. It exists because there's a consciousness that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And when you read, you know, sort of stories of shamans and how they operate and the ways that we can try and understand that, we can only try and understand things that are from a different culture, language, and construct. It's a very different structure. The processing is different. The integration is different. The language is different. Literally, the language is different. So everything that we do then is kind of a translation of that. And I think there's beautiful research into psilocybin assisted psychotherapy, ketamine assisted psychotherapy. And if done, you know, in a psychologically kind of therapeutic and responsible way. And by responsible, I mean proper elaborate intake, proper prep, and then proper integration. And I don't mean to use the word proper, but what I mean is to be kind of like given one of these very, very intense, you know, psychedelic drugs, and then kind of to be like, oh, you had an amazing experience, have a great day. A lot of stuff still comes up and gets to be metabolized. And you want to do that in a safe way. So maybe the word is not proper, but safe, you know, a safe and supported experience.
Yes, I think it's absolutely valid. And in, you know, currently I'm in grad school for clinical psychology, and I'm learning so much about how important it is to have the proper support and to have the adequate amount of guidance during an integration process. And I can't tell you how triggering it is for me to go online and just see these people promoting these journeys or these experiences.
And, well, and you have a clinical perspective, which I don't, you know, I mean, like you have a body of knowledge now and support around that. You're allowed to be as judgmental as you want to be.
Yes, that's right, everyone. Because I still feel a little bit like, okay, so you're doing that now. Like, okay, tell me about that. And why do you think, you know, why do you feel that that's the way that you want to do this retreat and without any clinical experience and you're charging $10,000? Yeah. Like, sorry, but you know what I mean?
Well, and I think it ties back to sort of like all of these conversations around like when things get commodified like that, you know what I mean? To sound like Karl Marx, but like anytime you sort of like put money around it, you know, when you put money around it and when you sell it, it's like, yeah, what's the value of your time and your existence? Especially for women, we're susceptible to that. We are. We're social creatures, you know. We're the ones purchasing a lot of the things that they're trying to sell. So
I have this other question that I wanted to ask you with regard to learning about all of these different topics and the types of guests you have on your podcast, you know, and again, from that neuroscientific lens. How important do you think is the role of spirituality for us women in this journey of aging?
I mean, it's a great question. You know, I think it's kind of the same question that ends with how important is spirituality? Meaning, if there's one thing I've been most surprised about from doing the podcast that we do, it's that by and large, the overarching what makes a difference in healing, in aging, in existing, in taking on challenges is a belief and some sort of practice honoring something bigger than ourselves. It's true for addiction, you know, and recovery. It's been true for every guest that we've had. This is not my agenda. This is every single person we've spoken to, whether it's a celebrity, right? Whether it's an expert in a field, whether it's a scientist, whether it's a mystic, whether it's someone who flatlined, had an experience and came back. There's a beneficial component to being in touch with something bigger than ourselves. And people like Joe Dispenza, people like Tony Robbins, they talk about it in terms of like, what can you manifest? What can you imagine? And I used to like roll my eyes at that. But through the process of the research that I get to do as part of the podcast that I do, I've come to understand the scientific notion of what does it mean to picture yourself in a better reality, a better health state than you are now, and to have a practice around that. And what we know is it changes your immune properties. It changes your ability to fight. It changes your ability to be resilient physically, emotionally. So when we wonder, like, why are people in religious communities? Why are they healing? You know, in these studies, right? Why are people healing? Why are people having spontaneous healings? Like, what is that, right? I can't say for certain because I want a double blind study, right? I want to see, we're not going to see that. But what we know from some of the studies that we're starting to get to look at is that, yeah, our bodies are more resilient when we are in touch with the sensations and the emotions of loving kindness, of reverence, of faith, and hope. That's what manifesting is. It's hope. What happens if you put yourself in a hopeful state? It's not just optimism. I'm not arguing for positive. Like, I'm the least optimistic person. But the notion of what if I spend, ideally, and this is ideally, 20 minutes twice a day in silence. In silence. And I let myself in that time get quiet. I learn the techniques. They're free. They're on the internet. You can find them. I learn the techniques to drop out of my head and into my body. What does that mean? You get to learn about it. And what if I spend even half of those 20 minutes imagining good things and letting my body feel what it feels like to feel love? That's what loving kindness meditation is trying to teach you to do. Not just, may I be safe? May I be happy? May I be safe? Like, can I feel that? You know, when you see the person you love across the room and your heart goes, oh, that's the feeling. That's the feeling of hope. And you can tap into it. And it absolutely is what is needed to navigate through every mental health challenge you will come to. Because especially in perimenopause, when it's like, maybe I shouldn't be alive, right? That is the darkest place that it takes us. The rates of suicide, the rates of depression, the rates of divorce for women, that's when it's happening. Maybe it's more than just like, he's bothering me, right? There's something going on. And if we can reach outside of our experience, our sadness, our depression, if we can reach outside of it and start to stimulate that feeling of hope, that is one of the things that sort of like helps stack the chips in our favor to be more resilient so that you can make the next doctor's appointment, so that you can believe that there's a way out for you, so that you can reach out to an amazing therapist like you, right? Like, so that you can get support, because that's the only way through it is through it.
Has there been a conversation from when you started your podcast to now that left a deep impression, or that you felt you initially were like, this is totally inaccurate, wrong, I don't get it, and then by the end of the conversation, or maybe a couple weeks later, days later, you were like, I was wrong?
So no one's ever asked me this. There have been a few conversations that, you know, have in some ways felt like the reason that I'm on the journey I'm on. Meaning, like, we all have times like that where it's like we meet the person, or we have the experience, or we, whatever it is, where it's like, oh, everything led to here. And sometimes it's a painful point, right? Like, everything led to here. We've had a couple conversations where my mind has been a little bit like blown in ways that, that I've definitely felt different, and that it stayed with me. But there was one that we recently did with kind of an unlikely person for this. And it was a theoretical physicist. And his name's Thomas Campbell. And he's this older guy, like white hair, white beard, very intense stare, you know, kind of like a nerdy windbreaker, you know. And he has a series of books. I only made it through the first one before we got to speak to him, because they're so dense. It's physics. And like, I haven't done physics in a minute, you know? And his books are, I think it's called My Big TOE, Theory of Everything. And Theory of Everything is a concept in physics where, like, is there one theory that can sort of explain relativity and like all the things, right? And so this book is like very, very dense. And I'm like, how am I gonna talk to this guy? Like, what is this conversation gonna be? And in addition, my partner, Jonathan Cohen, who hosts the podcast with me, we are partners, you know, not just business partners. Yeah. And whatever had happened that day, we were like I was not in a good mood. I was like, I don't wanna sit and have to like do this with him. Like, I wasn't really feeling it. And I was, you know, having like one of my moments, and I have many. And we sit down with this guy, and we ended up having a two-part conversation with him, because like it wouldn't end. And what was, I think, the most startling was that he was not a touchy-feely kind of guy. He was not like a huggy-wuggy, you know, kind of like, this conversation's going to feel like a warm hug. It's very, very like plain and simple. And his experience that led him down the path that he is on was that in college, there was like a sign advertising transcendental meditation, like, it'll help you study better. And he was like a nerdy physics student. He's like, all I wanted to do was study better. So he goes to a transcendental meditation class, and his very first time being taught how to practice transcendental meditation, he left his body and was off in the stratosphere. He was not on drugs. He was not drunk. He said he literally fell off his chair. They had to like pick him up and he's like, what just happened? And they were like, it's been 20 minutes. And he's like, no, it hasn't. He completely left his body and he continued practicing TM as this complete non-believer, meaning he wasn't mystical. He wasn't spiritual. He wasn't religious. He got in touch with what it is to drop out of your head into your body and to experience another level of consciousness. And this led him on a path to when he was walking down the street one day, he saw what looked like cotton candy between the trees. Like all the trees were connected. And he said to someone, oh, was there a party? Like, what are those streamers? And the guy's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He was seeing the connectivity of energy between trees. And this I have chills now because at the end of this conversation, I was hugging it out with him. I was no longer mad at Jonathan. And I was like, there is something that you don't even have to believe it for it to be accessible, right? And to me, like, I don't care if you don't believe in God. Gravity exists. Sun's going to come up tomorrow. It's all out there. Like, it's out there. Some of us may never have access to it. Some of us may try and have access to it. Some of us, like this random physicist who just like went to a class because he wanted to study better, can leave their body and touch it. That's the journey we're all on. And when people have near-death experiences and we get to talk to them and they're like, I didn't even believe in God. What is happening, right? And they experience that feeling, that love feeling, that something feels that for them. And it's usually like a light. It's a thing like, I have access to love. I deserve that. They come back changed. And what they say is, I'm a messenger for something, right? And Thomas Campbell was a messenger for something in a different way, right? That episode, it was like, anything's possible. And you don't even have to believe it. You don't even have to understand it. It's just out there. Do you want to try and find it? Do you need it, right? Yeah. And do you want it? Which is kind of what it's like. We all need it, but do you need it bad enough to say, I want it and I'm going to pursue it?
Yeah.
Wow. Thomas Campbell.
We'll link it in the show notes because everybody's going to be like, what? Wild.
Yes, it's wild. It's wild. But I mean, we've definitely, some of the near-death experiences we've had are just like, I mean, it's jaw dropping. Elizabeth Crone was kind of the one that set us off into this realm. She was struck by lightning and was dead on the pavement, but was watching herself dead on the pavement and then proceeded to leave her body for 2 weeks. She said she was out for a couple minutes and she got a complete download of an understanding of physics, religion, time. And she came back and started having precognitive dreams about plane crashes that ended up happening and she would document them. That blew my mind. And then we recently spoke to, she goes by Buddha Betty, who OD'd. She was a drug addict and a prostitute. And she died. And the things she experienced were inexplicable, except in the framework of there's something more. And when we leave this conscious state, which can happen a lot of different ways, we get to be in touch with something that is available to everyone. Everyone, every kid in East LA, everybody all over the world, right? It's available to all of us.
Yeah, it's so interesting when we look at it from the perspective of what you said, like the sun's going to come up, gravity exists. We can't explain everything. Right. And again, I can see from the perspective of the believer of mysticism, like this is so magical and it's like, manifestation is so incredible and I've seen it happen and I've seen it work in my life. But at the same time, I feel like my desire for being grounded and staying here is so important too, you know, because I feel like in order for us to expand to that level, we need to be anchored into something, right?
And I think also like what an amazing time for us to be alive. Because you can have both. And that's the thing, like when we were growing up, you were either like the crazy psychic tarot reader and like, or our grandmothers, right? Who like claimed that they could like manifest things, like whatever. Or it was like, take the Advil and that's the answer, right? And we're living in a time where enough people are questioning it. enough people are challenging it, and you don't have to choose anymore. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to choose. Like, people love asking me, how do you believe in God as a scientist? And I was always like, I don't know, I just do. And like, I think now it's clearer, right? 20 years ago, it was like, what? Now it's like, yeah, everything's, it's all the same. It's all one. Guess what? It's all one. And like, if you want to get really trippy about it, this is just, this is the illusion. This is the play that we're all playing. Like, you're playing you and I'm playing me. And there's something much bigger than all of us. It could be an alien, you know, domesticating us.
We do episodes about that too. Like, we're
correct.
You know, yeah. Like, we are.
We're just having a funny experience.
Have you ever watched The Egg?
No.
Oh my God, I'm going to send it to you. It's like, one of my nieces had to do it, had to watch it for school. She was six. And it starts off a little bit like, I died. He gets run over by a thing, but okay, I'm not going to give it away.
Oh, I'm going to link it. Okay, yeah. You'll send it.
But so essentially it's the explanation of connection and how essentially it's exactly what you're saying. Like, it's, you're me, I'm you. We're a part of this. It's an idea. It's a theory. I'll link it in the show notes. I'm gonna text it to you, and or I'll email it. I can give it to you. I can tell you what it is.
You can just telepathically send it to me, and I'll receive it.
I'm gonna put it in your heavy glass, and then you're gonna have to pick it up. Okay, so just to wrap up our journey, which makes me really sad because I want to keep talking to you. You're on Substack.
Yes.
So tell me about what your experience has been with Substack, and tell me why everybody needs to go subscribe right now.
So we're on Substack because while we love social media platforms and they're very helpful and useful and great, there's a different level of conversation that we've been wanting to have, a more intimate conversation. And that literally is what the platform is for. And really, for about 3 years, Jonathan has been like, there's got to be a way to have more contact, more special content, and to be able to cater it to the people who want it so that we know exactly what they want. Because, you know, I have millions of followers other places, which is great, but not everybody's as deeply invested in mental health stuff or, you know, wanting to know specifically. So that's what our Substack is for. It's called Mind Bialik's Breakdown. I also went back to writing. I used to write. I was a blogger. Like, even before I got Big Bang Theory, I was like a young grad student finishing my PhD, and I was a mommy blogger. And so I miss writing. I've written 4 books. Like, I'm a writer. So what I do is I put my writing on our Substack there. I have my own, but I use the Bialik Breakdown platform because I tie my writing into the episodes and things that come up. And also it's a place where we get to sort of like, I get to do deeper dives into Big Bang Theory stuff, Beaches, Blossom. Like, I'm doing more writing about things that, not just for the nostalgia factor, but like, where do they fit into the woman that I am now, right? Like, my entire childhood is on television, basically, if you'd like to see it, right? What is it like to reflect on that now? My entire adulthood, you know, up until now has pretty much been on television. So there's a lot of writing that I do also on Substack. So that's what Substack is for. And we literally have content we've been saving. We do rapid fires with a lot of our guests, and we've saved them all. And so they live on Substack. That's where they're going to go. And we think it's important to own our content, to be in charge of it, to not sort of like give it away to someone else. We want people to be able to enjoy it from the catalog that we've been creating. So yeah, that's what it's for.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that and for doing that. We will link all of everything we talked about. There's going to be so many links on this episode. please head over to the show notes and check out all of those links so you can follow. I just want to call her Dr. Bialik.
No, you can call me Dr. Mom. No, just Dr. Mom. Just Mayim.
Mayim, thank you so much for for making the trek, for joining us, for being a part of this community, and for sharing your voice and your knowledge with the world.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm really honored to be a part of it. I respect you greatly, and I'm really happy to get to talk. It's so rare that I'm interviewed like this. It's so weird, but I feel like we survived and I didn't drop my glass. So
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for watching this episode of the Radically Well podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. It helps us so much. Thank you so much for being here.
This is Steve Covino from Covino and Rich. Quick trivia, fellas. Every guy listening is a contestant. Answer honestly to yourself. You got a belly and a little chest, gassed by the afternoon, no drive left in the tank. You lack that confidence and mental edge. Those are classic signs that your testosterone's been sliding, and nothing drags it down faster than extra weight. So why not take matters into your own hands? Strip off the weight that tanks your testosterone with Byoma GLP-1 Booster. Every serving is packed with science-backed ingredients that crank up your natural GLP-1 production. Visit Byoma.health/GLP-1 and use code CRSHOW for 15% off your first order.